That lass on Radio 4 who's sort of Charlotte Green, she's got nothing on me.
Do you look into their eyes, Ian, or is that too personal a question? You don't want to go into this.
What would you be shouting at the television screen, Ian Lennox?
I can't proofread that.
But there is a slight suggestion that next season might be better. So.
Let's hope so.
No one seems to get a penalty for pulling shirts nowadays, or hardly ever.
Or Seven Simple Seasons.
See what we did there?
Yes, like it.
Fly Me to the Moon, the audio podcast companion with Rob Nichols.
Well, Tony Mowbray, eh? Who'd have thought it? A man who has been a midweek driver, who's appeared on this show, who's participated in so many great moments for Middlesbrough, a man for whom in many ways Fly Me to the Moon was named after the phrase that Bruce Rioch uttered when the words, who would he actually want to take you to the moon? He said, basically, Tony Mowbray, and he's gone and joined a club up the road. It is, quite frankly, astonishing. How do we actually react to this? Well, I don't know. I mean, Jenny Finch in Ireland, are the shockwaves still reverberating from, in the words of the front cover of the latest edition of Fly Me to the Moon, we mack 'em, they tack 'em?
Well, the shockwaves are still reverberating or they're drilling a well just up the road, which they might be doing. I think we react to it by being very, very mature and beating the bejesus out of them.
Good point. Jenny Bill, is that something which you also would echo? As I say, you can see he shared so many times with us. And betrayal, is that too strong a word for this signing of the Mogger by the Black Cats?
It's a bit before my time, isn't it?
No, it's not, Jenny. You were around in the days of Jack Charlton. That was way before Tony Mowbray was even working through the process. So in actual fact, he's only a couple of years younger than yourself. So it's not before your time. I can't have that as an excuse.
That wasn't what I meant. I meant the whole the Middlesbrough thing is before my time. The whole Fly Me to the Moon thing.
Yeah. Again, I would disagree, but maybe I'm still just hurting. Rob Nichols, as we actually celebrate this particular one in which we do have Jimmy Flynn's awesome ode to David Armstrong, which we'll be reading through. Was it a shock for yourself when you found that Blackburn Rovers obviously had done so much with respect to this man who'd been in charge of Coventry, West Bromwich Albion? As I say, he shared the airwaves with ourselves. And now, of course, he's at that other side.
Yeah, it's. I think he said himself yesterday how his son was finding it difficult to handle the fact that his dad had gone to Sunderland. Yeah, it's obviously the fanzine is named in honour of Tony Mowbray. he was the leader on the field without whom the club wouldn't still exist. He came back to help us as a manager at a time when Gordon Strachan had almost taken us to destruction in many respects, and we owe him a lot of debt of gratitude for that as well. It's a professional sort of decision. He's a manager. He wants to work. He wants to put his family first. He wants to live in the area, and he feels that he's got something that he can contribute to Sunderland. And he's somebody who has a tremendous feeling for the passion of the area. I'm saying all this through gritted teeth because it seems really, really weird. It's going to be very strange on Monday to be seeing Tony Mowbray sitting in the opposition dugout with it being Sunderland. It's not quite as bad being Blackburn, but with it being Sunderland, it's going to be very strange. But look, he's been phenomenal for the borough, and we'll always thank him for that. And a manager is what he is, so he will do his very best. Unfortunately, he's going to be doing his very best for Sunderland, and that's very strange.
Well, the only mild, possibly, salve to the whole system is twofold. One, maybe the new manager bounce has been exhausted after their 3-0 victory against Rotherham. And two, he could well actually take on board the same role as, of course, Agent Benitez, as followers of the Cop would have his during his time at Everton, and be just starting part of a grand plan to see Sunderland restored to at least a place in League Division 2.
Yeah, at least. It would feel really bad to sort of not wish him well, but it's quite hard to wish him well. But, you know, he's such an absolutely top guy. He really is. And but it's just such a strange notion, Tony Mowbray being manager of Sunderland. Strange.
But as Denny Finch just said, we must be mature. We must clearly look for a good victory.
Yeah.
And maybe my prediction was just a week late, that it wasn't a 4-0 beating of Swansea City. It will actually be a 4-0 beating of Sunderland that will actually kickstart the Boroughs' move forwards.
Like that idea.
Anyway, issue 628 has arrived electronically, if not physically, for some of us from that point of view. And we progress through, again, a variety of key things within this. Lots of thoughts within that. Clearly, still lots of memories and lots of views with respect to David Armstrong. But let's actually talk about an earlier version of perhaps a new character who's just taken on board the whole system in terms of goal scoring. We've got a new hero. Would you think that our latest hero from the Borough can match the work of George Campsall, who, of course, will have a statue, in fact, does have a statue now based around the riverside?
Yes, his statue has been unveiled as we speak this evening, Friday night, 7:30 p.m. It's fantastic. I mean, an incredible player, a credible goal scorer, scored 59 goals in one season. If Rodrigo Muniz can come anywhere close to even getting half that figure, then that'll be phenomenal, because I cannot remember the last time we had it must be Bernie Slaven, perhaps, who was the last player to score 20 in the league, because Ravinelli scored 16 in the league.
Yeah, Bernie Slaven would be beat before Jenny's Bill's time, actually.
So of course.
He's too young to remember Bernie Slaven before her time.
Yeah, well before the time. But that's if we can, you know, it was probably notable, the goal that he scored in the first few minutes against Watford, in the fact that we've got two players in Giles and Isaiah Jones that are basically employed to put the ball in the box. And Muniz got on the end of a really good cross. And that's what we've got him for. If we're getting the service into the box, which we are doing, then we need somebody to convert and so hopefully he'll snap their hands off and start to get a lot of goals. I don't know whether he'll ever get a statue to himself at the Riverside, but let's hope that it's the start of a really good season. And he comes out of the shadows coming from Fulham, where they're not short of goal scorers at Fulham. So he's a chance for him to really shine and with a team that with a fan base that really wants to get behind him. And what better way to start, presumably, for his first home start against Sunderland? What better way
than a hat-trick? Exactly. I mean,
yeah.
If Erling Haaland can actually score back-to-back hat-tricks, then surely Nunez must be on the starting line and could actually go for that. Some people might say, were we feeling sympathy with respect to Tavernier being on the hiding of a 9-0 drubbing from Liverpool? The answer is no. But in terms of Jenny Finch, your thoughts on this new strike? I mean, since we last spoke, of course, three more precious points for Borough, but then a last gasp winner for Watford meant that we still maintain our solid 20th position base.
Yeah, that was a bit of a kicker, really. You know, in extra, these ridiculously long extra times that you get at the end, and suddenly the opposition pop a goal in, and hey, there we go again. Yeah, I think they are playing much better than their position shows, but that's not going to help them if they can't claw themselves up a bit. It was a really, really good result against Sheffield. They just need to just hang on and focus. And I'm not sure about the goalkeeper, to be honest. The goalie's a bit flaky from the look of it.
Well, I mean, Luke Roberts, of course, has stepped in to Stefan as capable shoes whilst he's injured.
Liam Roberts.
Yeah. You mentioned, obviously, extra time there. I mean, clearly Ian Lennox is so devastated by the amount of extra time that was awarded at Anfield, which we should now refer to as the successor to Fergie time, being Klopp time, that clearly he just couldn't be part of the whole sequence today. But never mind. Newcastle, in a sense, is being represented ironically, by Jenny Bill, in the same sort of ironic way that Tony Mowbray is in charge of the other side. Jenny Bill, your thoughts on the sort of recent form, which, as I say, at least has got that first win under the belt, so that Middlesbrough, the last five games, have got draw, draw, lost, one, draw, and indeed 6 points from seven matches.
I think that as the other Jenny said, the scores don't actually reflect the quality of the play. I was actually at the Sheffield United match.
Sitting with Rob, I believe.
Sitting with Rob, yeah. I was indeed.
It's like the director's box of FMTTM, you see. The rest of us can only dream of such heady heights.
Yeah, we should have sent you a selfie, but we didn't think of it. And same thing there, a draw, and then the last minute goal that I saw the other day. And it's almost like they get to the end of the match and they lose their concentration for 5 minutes and oops, suddenly they've lost or drawn. And I think I said the same thing last season, that they don't score a lot of goals. I think they have the same problem that Newcastle have. They need Ronaldo, who's going to just stand in the box. Anything that comes his way, he's going to knock it in.
Strangely, even though the transfer deadline window has now shut, I think the chances of CR7 actually putting on the Borough shirt, given a current lack of European football, was remote, Rob. I mean, you might have got inside knowledge on that, but, you know, I'm just...
No, I think so. There's probably more chance of signing the original Ronaldo.
Now, as indeed, he's slightly. I mean, in which case you'd almost be getting two players for the price of one.
Yes, that's true. So, yes,
it's great.
Two players inside.
I know we're not being sizist, in case people are saying, "What's going on this thing?" Okay, let's not mess around. Let's jump straight into the poetry sequence before we start agonising over the home game against that other side from up the A19. You don't even believe that this is a derby. I mean, that's the key thing. They don't even believe that this is a derby. Well, I'm sorry, it is, but there we are. Maybe their derby should be against when they play Hartlepool. That should be a line from that. You know, that would be the closest thing to a derby. Are you ready, Rob, to actually start taking this slightly shorter than normal, but nevertheless very effective Jimmy Flynn David Spike Armstrong tribute? Of course, we gave full tribute to in the last Fly Me to the Moon podcast.
Yep, indeed. This is a tribute to David Spike Armstrong, who sadly died a couple of weeks ago at the age of 67. And we talked about him, didn't we, last podcast, about his 350-odd games he played consecutively for Middlesbrough, which is phenomenal. I think there's only a goalkeeper that's ever played more games in succession for any team. So, and Spike was an outfield player playing at a time when there was a lot of physicality in the game. So I'll begin. Should I? David Spike Armstrong. Middlesbrough FC is cloaked in sadness today with the news one of its greatest stars has passed away.
David Armstrong was a wizard of the wing whose praises ere some angels did joyously sing.
The baby-faced lad who laid claim to shirt number 11 has gone to play his football in heaven.
Making his debut while still a boy, every trick in the winger's manual he would employ.
With the appearance of a minor who should be tucked up in bed, he embarked on a career of filling fullbacks with dread.
Acquiring the monikers of Spike and Big Jack's little gem, he was key to Charlton's champions' march-winning stratagem.
He would effortlessly hug the touchline while sending over a string of crosses fine.
As his career progressed, he came to be a model of brilliant consistency and efficiency.
A record of 358 consecutive appearances and 59 goals scored assured his place on Borough's honours board.
The three full England caps that came his way were scant reward for one of the finest players of his day.
After 12 years at Borough, Southampton made him a saint, and at the Dell Stadium his career continued without restraint.
With Saints fans, he became a revered name and found immortality in Southampton's Hall of Fame.
Alongside Letizier, Shannon, Payne and Keegan, for all to see, David Spike Armstrong, the master of brilliant consistency and efficiency.
And there we have it, another Jimmy Flynn epic. Although I must admit, a very minor point, Jimmy, I would say he possibly maybe over-egged the whole system when he actually probably could have got away with just consistency. Although he liked consistency and efficiency. I would have taken out the second and efficiency with, as his career progressed, he came to be a model of brilliant consistency. I'm sorry, Jimmy, everybody's a critic, I know, but I'm just saying, it's just Just a minor point there. Whatever. And we do appreciate your recent comment, Jimmy, that you were flattered to actually have the poems read out from that point of view. In case people are wondering, back to bed with a minor, it's M-I-N-O-R and not a coal miner, in case you say, what are we doing putting coal miners back to bed? It's a different minor. Jenny, you're the writing specialist. What did you make of Jimmy's point? Am I being too harsh in saying maybe one of those consistencies could have been dropped, but what the hey?
I think it would have flowed a little bit better because it would have a stronger beat. But on the other hand, it's a point that needs making, and sometimes you have to use the words that you need. So I think you're both right.
Wow. And Jenny, Bill, obviously well before your time, the fact that you opposed with the actual championship trophy, it's a bit like we're talking about George Campbell again, isn't it? Who is before all of our time, basically.
Yes, we're all far too young. We're all far too young.
There we have it. Okay, Rob, in the centre spread, a fascinating insight that you alluded to on one of our recent Book of the Months about what you did at Stoke City in terms of seeing slightly inebriated Borough fans being escorted out of the stadium and indeed other issues with respect to, obviously, the quite right zero tolerance for racist abuse at Zac Steffen. Any thoughts on why you decided to actually deal with that and actually view the whole match from the police camera centre?
Yeah. Basically last season, almost a year ago, when we went to Stoke, it was a normal match. It seemed like a normal match. And then after the game, we were suddenly locked in and without any communication whatsoever, subjected to like half an hour of police glaring at us and then firing pepper spray at some of the supporters and then not helping them at all. And then we all had to go out one at a time with all these police glaring us, and we decided that was an inquiry about it, everything, but you know, with fans going back this year, we had to do something about like reaching out and trying to make sure that there was no problem of any repeats, and that people would feel that there would be that they could go to Stoke and not have a similar scenario again. So I was invited, or support was invited, and it was me go through all the shadowing of the police, the whole thing, which started at 4:30 from the chief officer's briefing, and then I went into a room with about 70 police, and I thought, I wonder if any of these people were staring at me last year as I was leaving the ground. Probably weren't, because I don't think there were many there that were actually at last year's match, but it was good to actually, I think it was a really positive thing to do, to see things from the police angle, but also just to sort of open up lines of communication, because that was one of the big big lessons from last year, was that they didn't communicate to the fans what was going on in the stadium or outside. And so this was a chance to do that and just to appreciate the whole operation. And how long they are planning for before the match. That was the third, the briefing was the third briefing that they'd had. So that must be before every single game, three briefings. And I'm going to have to go.
Rob, we appreciate the police are regularly in contact with you. Good,
yeah, 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 yeah.
It's understandable that phones will actually go off.
I'll have to go 5 minutes, I'm sorry.
Yeah, there we are. Jenny Finch, turning to your good self, is this something which you say, exactly, this is what we want, more police control of those fans of football. This is the surveillance society writ large. This obviously isn't needed for rugby supporters, but for those fiends in soccer/football, that's what we need.
Which Jenny?
Jenny Finch.
Right. I'm not sure I can comment on that, having fled the surveillance society in disgust. I think vandalism, hooliganism, racism have no place anywhere in sport or anywhere else. On the other hand, a complete police crackdown like there was at Stoke is out of order. And I think that the type of initiative that Rob was part of is the way forward. If both sides are actually willing to talk about it, look at the problems, and both sides work on it, then it will never get that far. If, on the other hand, you just get big blokes in truncheons and angry people shouting, you shouldn't be doing that, you've got an instant confrontation, and it's only going to end one way, and it's not going to be good.
Jenny Bill, big blokes in truncheons and angry people shouting a lot. Sounds like a typical ice skating event to me. Is this something, Jenny, that you tend to think, yeah, you know, Jenny Finch is absolutely right, we need to have kind of light touch, or is it a case of no, slap down security is the way forward?
No, I don't think you need to have slap down security. Unfortunately, it's not just football, there's all sorts of sports or music concerts, that sort of thing, that incite this sort of behaviour. And I think what Rob did, because he did tell me he was doing it, and then I did speak to him about it afterwards, because I was quite interested to hear what he did. I think that that sort of thing, the initiative that they took, is what, if people see something that they, like what happened last year, it's a great idea if they actually go ahead and get involved in trying to make it better. I mean, I know when I was young and I used to go to football matches, I used to think it was a lot worse than it is now. The fighting, and, you know, because the terraces were all open, and I've been at a football match, I got hit over the head with a bicycle frame that was thrown from the other fans. And I've been involved in, you know, where the fans are supposed to be moving out very, very carefully. I can always remember it was at Leeds, and we got chased. The police got chased. We got chased by fans throwing bricks and all sorts of things, which is just, it's completely, people seem to get incensed at certain matches or certain venues into this kind of sort of frenzied behaviour. And I don't see that kind of behaviour as, I mean, you do when you see a lot of the international matches, you see a lot of really crazy behaviour, I think, because people go away and they drink and they just think they can do whatever they want and there's no consequences. But I think with bringing in seats and various other things, you know, the stewarding is probably, I think nowadays the stewarding is far more conscious of all these things, the way they deal with it. It's just, I think it's something that's always going to be ongoing. And I think what Rob did is the way forward. That sort of thing is the way forward, where two sides can discuss so that you can have come to a happy medium.
Yeah, I mean, interesting, being hit over the head with bicycles. It sounds like a Conservative Party conference, but never mind. That's for another issue at another time. Talking about angry people, and indeed there is an image of Kenny Everett's Mr. Angry on page 7 of the latest edition of Flying to the Moon. Chris Bartley actually comes up with his lines that enough is enough. The last home game against Swansea was a great occasion. Although we clinched a nervy 3 points, there's always something very special about your first home win of the season. And it was played in the glorious August sunshine with a 3 o'clock kickoff. Then I couldn't help thinking about the many aspects of football in 2022 that really grinds my gears. He goes on to talk about the impact of television, the direct relevance of changing the times of Sky to that point of view, and indeed also lines up the whole system. But for reasons motivated by sheer greed, we've had our season start too early with no regard for players or fans. And he has a secret fear that when the season recommences before the end of the World Cup on the 10th of December, the fans will once again be inconvenienced with some ridiculous kickoff times to avoid clashing with the final stages of the World Cup. Before he was accused of being a negative Norman, surely not, Chris. He'd like to put it out that he's really loved the experience of live football since the enforced COVID break, but the powers that be, including Sky, take a big risk in being complacent with the devotion of fans. There might be a day when they say enough is enough. Jenny, do you think he's got a point that actually it's all about the television? Jenny Finch, let's come to you in terms of that.
I think it is. I think the huge amount of television money that's schlepping about in the Premier League is indicative of that. I'm glad there are still people who go to live football matches, because, you know, you can see so much. If you buy a Sky subscription, you can just drown in football. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the real fanatics now go to, hence the chimp behaviour you get sometimes, I think. Real fanatics tend to go to live matches. I think because it's all about the money and it's all about television, and yes, they do dictate very much who's going to be playing when and where, because of the ratings. Lower leagues, League Two and League One, are suffering because of it. And I don't know what you can do about it, because you've got an awful lot of private buyers now who bought football clubs and their investments, and they want the money and they need the money to pay some of the wages, which are quite high in some instances. And I don't know how you can get out of this spiral, especially as he said, COVID put them up on a pedestal as the people who helped to save football and kept it broadcast and kept people's interests. You try and get them down now, no chance.
We were talking last week about the Welcome to Wrexham TV documentary series that is taking Pride of Place with the Disney Plus channel and their FX connection, where we have Ryan Reynolds, who of course has gone to court again to actually try and ensure that National League matches can be live streamed overseas. Again, there are issues with respect to that in terms of obviously fans of Stockport and Wrexham, and pay attention, this is hopefully where we see Sunderland performing in a few years from now, that within that whole side of things there, they've also got that question about how can they live stream or not live stream. I mean, Jenny Bill, do you agree with Jenny Finch's line there in terms of you've got to get this, again, it's about balance, the joy of being a subscriber where you can watch football wall to wall, or is this inconveniencing the people who at the end of the day, we were regularly told during lockdown, we need the fans back?
It's again, it's like we were the last thing that was just talking about. I think it's getting a happy medium. And unfortunately, there's masses of money in football, and certainly the top clubs and the big events, everything revolves around the TV rating, the TV times. You know, I mean, in the way they schedule all the matches, a lot of the time, I mean, I know from working at Newcastle that matches get moved, and it's all because of it's a television schedule. So they can get, you know, one match in and then another match and then another match. So you can get three matches on a Saturday afternoon onto the TV to get more people viewing. But then obviously that's bringing money back into the clubs. So it is the other thing that I was thinking when you were talking earlier is I find the trouble is that a lot of the time the tickets are, you know, the tickets have got very expensive. And so, you know, and we're in a recession. And so people think, well, you know, I'll just watch it on telly because I can't afford the fares, the travel, the tickets. And it's not because they don't want to watch the live football. It's because they basically just can't afford to do it. And so watching it on the TV is the way to go, unless you miss it all. So it's getting a happy medium.
Just an interesting point there, just in case Mr. Sahawi wants to get on the phone to actually say, we're not in a recession. We've got difficult economic times. We haven't quite reached the recession stage as yet. That's yet to be admitted by the Bank of England and the government. And let's face it, we always trust, as in Lynn, whoever is actually in there. Mind you, it could be Rishi. Who knows? Mind you, Harrogate Town in charge of the country? Very bizarre. Rob, welcome back to us. We've just been talking about the very angry, this time at least in terms of Fly Me to the Moon, words of Chris Bartley and his concern about fandom being exploited yet again within football by those nasty mandarins from television.
Yeah, and I thought yesterday, the final day of the transfer window, I thought the Premiership clubs it's just like a different reality. And
you mean Middlesbrough weren't considering a £90 million gazumping for Anthony for the Ajax player?
It's unbelievable. I think it's even got to the point where some of the Sky reporters were questioning the morality of football, of Premier League football. It's a completely different world when everybody is facing up. We won't say recession then, we'll say that facing up to
challenging economic times.
An incredibly difficult winter. And
Boris Johnson said all we need to do is buy a new kettle and that'll solve everything.
That's right. But and I think that some of the situations with you were saying about lower league clubs, and I think is it Accrington Stanley that are very much against the new ruling, because it basically means that any club that the away club will get the money for all the all the Derby fans or whatever fans that are going to tune in to watch Accrington, the away club will get the money, and Accrington Stanley will not see the people going into through the turnstiles will not see their money from the buying cups of teas and food, and will not get a share of that revenue as well, which they do at the moment. So there's all sorts of real problems for football, and you're right, there's the inconvenience of having to play the Middlesbrough versus Sunderland game at 8 p.m. on a Monday, which, as Chris Bartley says, is the first school night for many kids. So it's an absolute nightmare, because the Middlesbrough sort of pride themselves on the family section, and they sell a lot of family tickets, and you can bet your bottom dollar that end would have been packed on a Saturday. On a Monday evening, after the first school day, it'll be almost empty. And that is a real problem for football, because those are the kids are the fans of the future for me. Well, you hope we're going to be the fans of the future, because that's what you need fans to be going to the actual match, I think. Or it's without an atmosphere. Is it a spectacle? If it's not a spectacle, it won't be on TV. And if it's not on TV, the money won't go into the game. And some people would say that's all well. If all that money is just flowing out for people like Anthony and his agent, you know.
Yeah. Okay. Let's move on to more positive and upbeat ways to finish the particular program. We will be having another podcast, hopefully, on the 16th of September, which is ahead of Borough's game against Rotherham United. But there are three games between now and then to actually predict. So let's start off with Jenny Bill. Your prediction for Middlesbrough Sunderland.
Sorry, everybody, but I think it's going to be Middlesbrough 1, Sunderland 2.
Callum McManaman, I believe, scored the late Sunderland equaliser in the last game back in 2018 before Sunderland decided to occupy what some might say was their rightful place. But never mind, Alex Neil has obviously had the right idea. What about your views on the trip to the seaside, Jenny Bill, Blackpool versus Middlesbrough?
I think Blackpool will win.
It's the positivity that you're bringing to Bill's Boris predictions here that is really impressive. So there we are. And your score then?
2-0 to Blackpool. Sorry.
Okay. And let's turn to Jenny Finch. What are your thoughts on Borough versus Sunderland?
I think it'll be 2-1, but I think it'll be the other way around. I think Middlesbrough will beat Sunderland 2-1.
There you go. And Blackpool against Borough?
I've got a better run. Last three matches, lost one, lost. Drawn, lost. I'd say 1-1, Blackpool.
I see. And we'll stick with you, Jenny Finch. Borough versus Cardiff City, a game on the 13th of September.
I think we will. Is that home or away?
Home.
3-0 to Borough.
Yeah, well, one of those is going to be of my 4-0 scoreline. And let's say I'll go for Middlesbrough 4-Sunderland. What the hey? Hope springs eternal, as many Newcastle United fans would actually say. Blackpool versus Middlesbrough could be a 1-1 draw. And I think 3-0 for Borough Cardiff City. So I'll agree with you on that one. Jenny, Bill, your final one for Borough versus Cardiff City?
2-0 to Middlesbrough.
Oh, a result there. And Rob, finally, your thoughts on all three, please.
Obviously, we're going to beat Sunderland, Alex, without a doubt. They haven't beaten us for a decade. I remember Marcus Tavernier scoring his first goal for Borough against Sunderland. And I think we're going to beat them 3-1. It's going to be a tremendous result that's going to really whip up everybody into a fervour. To travel to Blackpool for our first game at Blackpool on a Saturday for... Well, I can't remember the last time we played.
And you can see the illuminations as well afterwards.
Yeah, well, yes, absolutely. What an opportunity. A lot of people are staying there. There's going to be about 4,000 to 5,000 fans there, and they're going to see Middlesbrough win 2-1 because Blackpool are also facing challenges at the moment. And then we will take those two wins into the home game with Cardiff, and we will quell the Welsh Dragon and win that game 2-0.
So 9 points out of 9. By the time we next speak, we'll be heading clearly into playoff paradise territory. How can people subscribe to the paper edition of Fly to the Moon, Rob? What's the best way forward?
Best way is to go to the website, which is fmttmborough.com, and look out for fanzine shop, or indeed subscribe, and all the information is there. And we've still got eight matches left this season, because this is the longest season, isn't it? With all the, we do it every month. Yes, join us on the ride as we start to go forward now, and optimism returns.
Indeed. So, and as this is the companion podcast to issue 628 versus that other side up the road, it's time for us to wrap up with those immortal words. Rob, would you like to just lead us in your usual manner?
Okay, after three. 1, 2, 3. Come on, Borough.
Borough.
And up the Borough.
Up the Borough.